From the Rod McKeefery Podcast Network, I'm Isaiah Castilleja, and this is Iron Game Chalk Talk 2.0. On this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk 2.0, Coach Shattuck talks about how to stay ahead of the game, being one coach that manages hundreds of athletes, the importance of going all in and betting on yourself to succeed, and how a stint in the business world helped her prepare for her dream job. All this on another episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk 2.0. This episode is brought to you by Team Builder. Team Builder is the premier strength and conditioning app for teams and private facilities. Used by more than 2,500 organizations worldwide, performance coaches can write training programs online for athletes to access on their mobile app or where they work out in the weight room view on a tablet. Right now, when you start a 14-day free trial, use promo code CHALK, that is promo code CHALK, to access more than 70 strength conditioning programs directly in your Team Builder account, including 4 sports science questionnaire templates. I'm telling you, great people, great software. Check them out. Welcome, everybody. Thanks for listening. On this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk 2.0, we have Nicole Shattuck. She's the assistant strength and conditioning coach at Bucknell University. Prior to Bucknell, she was an assistant strength and conditioning coach at Wofford College and an assistant strength and conditioning coach at MSU Denver. Welcome, Nicole. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Thanks very much. Appreciate you having me.
Of course. Go ahead and tell us a little bit about your role at Bucknell University and the teams you work with.
Yeah, so I was brought on March 2019, and I'm very fortunate to work with 7 of our programs, of our varsity programs. I have volleyball, men's tennis, women's soccer, women's rowing, women's water polo, and women's lacrosse. So I think I covered them all.
Those are huge teams. How many athletes do you actually are in control of or manage?
So overall in those, I think probably close to a little over 200. You know, the women's rowing team is, I think, can have 60 to 75 on the roster. Now that includes coxswains, so I don't tend to train them. But, you know, in the spring, when we started out, I had 55 women in our weight room. And that's a lot of people. It's a lot of management. So fortunate, but it can, if you're not careful, it can be overwhelming, I guess.
Yeah, and definitely. How do you go about managing 200 athletes? You have a pretty similar workload to like some coaches have in like their entire athletic department, and you have 200 just to yourself. How do you go about managing that?
Learn their names. That's the first thing you have to do, is try and learn their names. And that to me is, I mean, I was brought in the middle of a semester, so just in general, meeting most of those teams, getting to know faces, making myself, you know, visible at practices, that has helped me the most. Just getting, again, to know the team, to know their culture, and then managing that. I guess it's just do your best every single day. Right. We use Bridge Athletic, which is a software program to deliver our training, and we have iPads in the weight room, and that actually helps a lot. What I do miss is being able to hand out training cards, calling out names, and organizing a little bit differently. But I mean, if they're training twice a week, 3 times a week, you get a good opportunity to learn their names and just kind of get the lay of the land, I guess.
I've heard from somewhere that the most important word in anybody's language is their own name. So when you hear your own name, like Nicole or anything else, you tend to like perk up and listen a little bit more and kind of get that buy-in. How do you yourself manage, you know, the programming side of having that many athletes?
Yeah, that's a lot. you just got to try and stay on top of it, number one. So you have to get started early. What I will do is I have a document that my old boss at Wofford developed, and it's really more of an expectations sheet. It's one page print off PDF that I will send to all of my coaches, and that will be at the beginning of a season, or sometimes I do it at the end of a season, depending on how it went, what can we learn from, all that stuff. But what I did at the end of spring last year was I printed it out. I gave it to each one of my coaches, said, hey, let's meet whenever you're in town these next couple weeks. Because obviously when the semester wraps up, people go places, they may take a vacation, take some time off, but everybody eventually comes back in between their recruiting trips and whatnot. And kind of use that as a guide to get an idea of where the coach is, what they see their vision for the program, what their culture is, what they think of in terms of what we can accomplish in the weight room and how I can best support that. So for me, that's been a huge help, is understanding the expectations of the head coach, of their program, and how I can obviously support them and their athletes the best way possible. They're at every practice with them. Our men's and women's water polo coach, he's been at Bucknell for many years, had a lot of success, and he knows that sport. So I will take notes on everything he says. I go to their practices. And last summer, I actually had one of the assistant coaches take me through some instruction in the pool. I said, hey, can you get me in there so I can get an understanding of what it feels like? Because that was a newer sport for me. I'd never worked with it and certainly have never competed in it. But so with that, it was getting started early. And then I keep folders on each of my teams. That's really helped me stay organized. I've learned that from my dad over the years. He always had a different notebook for every different account he's worked with in sales. And that way I can keep my notes. I write out my 20-week progression as far as just general ideas. And sometimes I put it into a spreadsheet so I can get the big picture, an annual planner. But then once I pop things into Bridge, that's made it a lot easier, I think, in season and when we're on the go in the semester. So I can make changes a little bit more on the fly instead of saying, okay, here's your lift card, but here are some of the changes we're going to make. So that's made it easier in season to make adjustments as needed, depending on practices, competition. But yeah.
Yeah, I think that's important. And I know a lot of our listeners, are coaches that are up and coming and trying to learn from all the coaches that we've featured on here. And I think a big thing that's overlooked in a lot of internship curriculums and what they might be, they learn a lot of the X's and the O's, but I think one common variable that we all face is we're support staff for the head coach, and that's their team. And if you don't have that head coach bought into what you're doing, it can make things a little difficult, or at least, know that's their bread and butter. That's how they, pay for their car and their food for their family. So it's good to know what expected out of them. So you actually got in the water and had the coach take you through something, just you understand better what your athletes are going through.
Yeah. So the assistant coach took me through just some basic, even just how to throw. Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing was, it's not a typical treading water. What they do, and I'd read about it in the articles, what they do, an egg beater movement. And she had to explain to me how you should feel in the water. You should feel like you're sitting on a chair. She said, it's really hard for the women, especially, to get their, the men, because they tend to have just tighter hips. It's harder for them to get that full position, almost like a wide stance, if you will. And then the motion of your feet, how that has to go. I was laughing half the time taking on water because it was just so hard.
Yeah.
You could just tell that it was work for me to try and get that patterning even. I can't replicate that in the weight room, but even from that, I was able to say, okay, this is how I want to now use a sumo deadlift. Mm. Because I had thought about doing box squat with that team, and we tried it in the fall. And as much as I liked it, it really takes a lot of time. And for a team that's not typically on land, I needed to have something a little different so we could get, again, that position, but also that explosive nature, you know, a power output from doing a lighter but higher velocity movement from that deadlift. So it just, it was great to have that experience with her. But then, yeah, she showed me how they throw, which is a little bit different from tennis. It's a little bit different from, like, I guess, like an overhead serving pattern, if you will. But that is actually what the coach said it was more similar to. He said it's not like softball. Softball or baseball, they'd actually turn their upper body relative to their lower body and then follow through. If I were to shoot at the goal from in water polo, I'd have my hips and shoulders forward, and I'd pull my arm back as far as I can. I'd get a little bit of twist out of that T-spine, but then I'd follow through. So it's more squared up as opposed to of rotation that you would typically see. Then they have the other hand in front for sculling, and we tend to see more impingement on that side. Mm. It was, you know, so he, it was awesome to be able to see that. And then I had one of the athletes on campus working and training. She was working on campus last summer. So she'd come and train 4 days a week, early mornings. And I told her that I was going in, and she said, I'm telling the team, I'm going to let them know that you got a little taste of what it's like. So they appreciated that too.
Yeah. I was gonna say, how do you think that helped with the buy-in on the team with the both coaches and, you know, the athletes being like, you know, our strength coach is just literally, you know, threw herself in water and is trying to, you know, better understand our sport. Cause water polo, I'm pretty sure, is not a very, and there's not that many schools that have a water polo team, like as an official varsity sport. So I think it's important for that the athletes are probably understanding, like, Nicole's never been around a water polo team. So here she is jumping in a pool, trying to better understanding. How do you think that helped out with your buy-in?
I think that was a good start. It was definitely a great start. And they were able to ask me about it. It started a conversation. And then I know what continued it was showing up to their practices and seeing how their swim sets would go. So they, it gets them saying, hey, this coach cares and she wants to know and she wants to help us. I know the coaches, the assistant coach is all about it. The head coach, he tends to have that poker face. I think he's more or less like, do your job, which I can appreciate too, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's important without building culture. And, you know, if I were to walk in to the Bucknell weight room, and if I were to come in during one of your lifts, what kind of culture would I see with you and your teams?
So it's funny because a couple times our head strength and conditioning coach, my boss, Jerry, will walk in and he either has another coach with him or somebody he wants me to meet and say, you were in coach mode. I couldn't really distract you. So I would have to say we're focused. Another big thing I'm all about is I'm not a cheerleader, but I like to have energy in the weight room, and I don't like it to come from me. I want to see teams cheering each other on and helping each other out in a way that they're, you know, not saying anything rude by any means, but, you know, calling it like it is and saying, hey, that's not how you do that. Here's how we're going to do it. And this is what coach said or something like that. So the culture that I try to have is we want to be focused. We want to be, I like to tell people I'm unapologetically demanding. I'm on it all the time. So I need you to be on it all the time. That's how we're going to go.
No, that's awesome. And I think it's important to know it's okay to just be you. You know, you don't have to be the cheerleader or the big juice coach just because, you know, it's what's popular. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, because I know of a few coaches that are, you know, bringing the juice and they're going crazy, but that's just who they are. And I think the most important thing is the athletes see you're being genuine to yourself, and you're not forcing yourself into a mold that's just not you. Cause I think they'll be able to say, like, Nicole's just full of it. Like, this is not who she is, versus, you know, the focused and demanding one that's looking for, you know, you're the athletes to do that.
Absolutely. I, a big thing that I had started doing, I think more this year than anything, was grading myself after either the day or the week and just saying, okay, how did this session go? What did I learn from it? What am I going to do differently? Or, you know what, this was pretty solid. This is how I want to run this from now on. And I learned last semester, I think I was just trying to control too many things in terms of the weight room itself and the culture that, you know, Bucknell has in terms of its strength and conditioning is different from what I had at Wofford. At Wofford, it was very much organized in a different way. And the organization equals discipline. And it's a little bit different here in terms of the autonomy that we give a lot of our athletes, but also because of just the amount of athletes. We have to get over 600 student athletes in through our doors through a week. That's a lot of people. And sometimes class schedules conflict. And I felt, just kind of looking back at the semester, I was like, you know what? I tried a little too hard. And I found something that kind of met not only how I operate, but it also met the needs, I think, of the weight room culture itself in terms of the change that I made more specifically was to be very specific about this is your rack space. This is how the flow will go, but then letting the athletes keep that flow on their own. And once I think they saw that and they saw it less as a on the whistle kind of thing, they were able to be more successful in that environment. You know, I have to create an environment where they feel comfortable pushing themselves and driving and challenging themselves on a day-to-day basis. If I can't do that, if what I put up makes them feel like they're just confined, can't step out of line, they're not going to be successful either. So that was definitely a little learning experience for me. Just, I think, the sheer number of athletes that we have here.
You know, it takes a mature coach to be able to sit there and grade yourself, you know, and especially as frequently as you were doing it, just to keep yourself honest. You know, I'm a big fan of, you know, being candid with yourself and then your peers and around you. Make sure you guys are always evolving to become, you know, better coaches. And I know you previously said like part of your organization is with what your dad was doing with sales and staying organized. And I know in the business world, there's a lot of, you know, self-evaluation, getting graded on how you do things. And I know from previously working with you and knowing what was on your resume and everything, you actually started out in the business world. Could you tell us a little bit more about how the business world helped prepare you to become a better strength and conditioning coach?
Yeah, I have had a non-traditional path, to say the least. So I did start in sales in Rochester, New York, after I got an undergraduate degree in business with an international relations finance. So that's,
I was, yeah, nothing,
the world
nothing
was my
close.
Oyster, right? It felt very much like I could do anything, but what am I doing at the same time?
Right.
So I started in basically internet marketing and advertising. And I think at the end of the day, as much as I would say I'm not a salesperson, I think everybody is in sales. And what I learned certainly through those experiences was you have to be organized, you have to listen, and you have to pay attention to, we called it the true objection. And that would be, you know, if let's say if a coach comes to you and they're talking about how worried they are about their athletes not being able to, you know, do something on this day or whatever, like you have to ask questions in order to find out what is this person really looking for? And how can I give you what you need within my wheelhouse? What am I able to do? So, you know, for example, we've had coaches, especially with everything that happened with COVID and whatnot, trying to figure out ways to get their athletes to stay motivated. And they were, you know, one of my coaches came to me and said, hey, I'd really like to do this. I think they need to do a lot of running this summer. I said, I'm, you know, let me think about it. Let me talk to the athletic trainer. And it was just more or less trying to figure out what he was looking for in terms of running is not part of the sport that I'm talking about. And I had some concerns about it, but I needed to ask him a couple more questions to find out, okay, what do you really want? And how do you see it playing a role in your goal for these next 10 weeks, these next 20 weeks, what have you? And more or less what he was looking for were just some more options for his team and giving them the opportunity to, okay, we're going to train for our sport how we normally would, but because we're not competing for until probably next semester anyways, can we give them some options to just stay active but also measure themselves? So I understand that, and it was more or less asking questions and seeing what his actual objection, I guess, was and what he really was looking for. So and that, I suppose, is just, again, more part of things you would learn in business in terms of consulting and giving people solutions to their technology problems or efficiency or something like that. It's my job to work with what I have to get you to the place you want to be. So it would definitely be communication, listening, finding that true objection, and then just being resourceful. A lot of times people don't know what they want. And I remember that was one of my first sales lessons, was learning from, his name was Brian Selinsky, and he told us about the microwave. He said nobody knew they needed a microwave until somebody showed them what a microwave could do. Like, what are you talking about? But it made sense, I suppose. So it's also about educating people is what I would say. And that's a big part of, you know, a lot of coaches want to do things their way or how they always have done it or what have you. And it's okay to say, hey, coach, I saw this piece of research. I'd like to send it to you. Do you want to talk about it? Something like that. And at the same token, I want my coaches to, you know, watch their webinar or go to a conference and say, hey, I saw this technique. What do you think about it? So we can exchange those ideas and make it more of a conversation as opposed to this is what we have to do. But yeah, so I was in sales for a while, moved to corporate marketing, and that's a whole nother ball game. And then I ended up working at a trophy shop, which I don't know if that's really business, but nice. In a lot of ways it's customer service. That's for sure.
All right.
And especially when we're talking about communication, just being able to say, hey, I got your message. Let me read it and I'll get back to you. Or just making sure that people know that you've seen them
right.
In a way. Because the last thing you want is a coach saying, hey, did you get my email?
Yeah, it's definitely true. And a lot of times when you're working your way up through the ranks, you know, you're so focused on the X's and O's, but then you got to realize the dynamic of the relationship with the head coach, relationship you might have with the athletic trainer, the administrator who's watching over strength and conditioning. So much of what we do is outside of the weight room or outside of the playing field. I think fortunately for you, it's been to your benefit to have started out, you know, in a corporate business world or start out in the business world so you could better understand, you know, the dynamics of those relationships.
I think too, even what I learned from working with you, especially, is if I'm going to be a head strength and conditioning coach at some point in my career, you have to operate like a business. You need to be able to say, here's our budget. Here's how we plan to fundraise. Hey, did you see, I remember, it was before I got the job offer here, but I had interviewed at the University of Sioux Falls, and the head strength coach there had talked about how they use one of the local dairies and they partner with them to get fresh milk and one of the bakeries to get bread so they can make sandwiches because they don't really have an extensive budget for nutrition. So that was an easy way for them to say, hey, now we're going to put these, you know, sponsors on our football field, you know, something like that, or on our website, but now we have nutrition options and stuff for our athletes. And I'm like, that's, again, you have to be able to think outside the box. And I remember when we would go through for fundraising, you'd take us right up to the business office and have those conversations with the right people. And that's a huge part of it, because it's not just, you just want to be a strength coach. Cool. But there's a lot more to it.
It goes back to, like, you want to be a head strength coach, you got to start acting and thinking like a head strength coach, even as an assistant or even as an intern. And my big thing has always been, you know, be a solutions person, not a problems person, because every program, no matter how big and well-funded you are, every program has a problem, but it's just how you're going to come about that solution. So, you know, at MSU Denver, it's, you know, at the time it was fundraising. So I was like, all right, we got to come up with solutions. So we're not just always asking for funds to help us, you know, create a weight room and assistant positions. It was kind of like, all right, yeah, we need it, but here's some solutions. I want to go back to something you had said is, you know, you worked in sales, and I know sales and even working, getting corporate sponsors for the weight room and whatnot, it's a numbers game. You know, to get 10 sales, you're going to have to call 100 people and whatnot. You just get used to failure. You know, you just get used to, like, the no's. And how has that helped you out on your path from when you were an intern driving from New York and then working your way up in Denver and then in Spartanburg, Carolina, and then all the way up to where you're at now? Like, how has that experience helped you better prepare to the rigors of, you know, working your way up the strength conditioning profession?
We used to have a saying in our cube pods, and it was for every nine no's, you'll get one yes. And that was, I mean, that's something that is definitely, it's present everywhere, right? Whether you're applying for jobs or, you know, just colleges, universities, what have you, if you're asking for it, you're getting closer to that yes. And so it's always being, you have to continue to be persistent with it. And you can't give up. You just can't. You have to be so committed and driven and just clear on not only your values, but your expectations for yourself. Because I think, you know, with whatever you're selling or whatever your goal is, you will start to doubt yourself. You will start to doubt yourself when so many people have said no, or family members have said, why don't you just get a real job? Or, you know, I'm not going to be able to do it. And I think, was it Rachel Balkovic? She said it on a podcast that was like, if you, something about getting pushed so close to the edge. I can't remember it right now, but she said something about it. If you haven't thought about giving up, you've not pushed yourself close enough to the edge, because at some point you're just going to get that close where you're like, I don't know if I have it. And then you better, if you have it, you will have the resolve to say, I'm going to do it.
Right.
And I've had friends tell me, wow, you're really good with rejection, when they heard about how many jobs I had applied for within strength and conditioning. And the fact is, there are a lot of people vying for the few jobs that there are in collegiate strength and conditioning. And that's a really hard thing to be okay with. But you have to know that every step, every day is just a step closer, and that the time will pass anyways. Time will pass anyways. So do whatever you can with the time that you have. So when I was driving, got the call from you in December, what was that, 2016? And I was selling my gym equipment and then packing up my, you know, selling stuff, just putting stuff in my car, take whatever I could, driving across the country. It was kind of a no-brainer, because at that point I was like, this is what I want to do, and someone try and stop me. But you can't be your own worst enemy, though.
It's definitely true. And I remember interviewing you, and you did a great job in the interview. And then, you know, for the internship, at least, is completely voluntary. And you know, I was like, you pay your own way to come to Denver. And that's kind of my way of, you know, checking to see if you're really passionate about it. And I knew you were in New York, so I was just like, yeah, sure, you got it. Like, if you can come out here and make it happen, like, I'll know you're really about it. So it's yours. But if that's up to you, if you want to leave New York and packed up your whole life and sold off everything you had and like stopped everything to come to Denver. And that's when, you know, it showed in your work and everything that you're willing to take a chance on yourself and willing to, you know, put it out there. And what's next for, you know, Coach Nicole Shattuck?
Couple things. I hope I get to see my athletes compete. That's number one. And time will tell on that. I don't have any control on that. I did start looking for some continuing education as far as, do I want a PhD? Am I willing to?
Oh, no.
Oh, dear.
There we go. Yeah, there we go. Get it done.
So looking for some programs, but also I was listening to a podcast or a roundtable. NSCA had a special interest group roundtable. They had four female strength and conditioning coaches that had up four women's lacrosse programs, top programs in the country, Princeton, Michigan, Maryland, and Loyola. And one of the moderators, Tracy Zimmer, I think she's at University of Florida. So I was really excited about watching them and listening to them and just getting their perspective. But one thing that a couple of them had said, you know, in talking about some of their programming and assessments for return to campus, they would say, oh, well, we got this from Maryland. I was messaging our women's lacrosse coach saying, I want that. I want them to say, oh, we're doing the Bucknell. That's, and I know that's kind of one of those things, but I hope that, you know, the stuff that we work on here and the coaches that I, you know, collaborate with, I hope that once I'm gone and have left Bucknell at whatever point that may be, I hope that the legacy kind of continues and that they're, you know, that the program sees success from the things that we do and I guess a legacy in a way, if you will.
No, I think that's something great. And I know that the pandemic has allowed us to maybe think about that more when we all got shut down. We all had a chance to focus on, you know, either continuing education or, you know, the legacy side of things. If you could pick up the phone and call Nicole from 4 years ago, what would you tell her?
I would say, get your mind right. Yeah, get your mind right and ask for more, because just take every chance you can. Take every opportunity. That's all it is. Take every opportunity.
Very profound there, Coach Nicole. I like it. So
I'll also get ready to eat a lot of rice and eggs.
Yes. Oh yeah, definitely. I remember surviving. That's all, literally what I survived on, is like a pound of rice. I cook it and then I boil 12 eggs and I just mash them all together and I just take a cup at a time and try to survive throughout the first couple years of my experience.
I've not done that.
Yeah,
don't know.
Exactly. What would be a good way for our listeners to get a hold of you? Let's say if they want to ask you any follow-up questions or kind of see what you got going on there at Bucknell.
Yeah, so email probably best. You can find that on the Bucknell Athletics website. Yeah, Instagram, probably just a direct message, something like that. And then, yeah, I'm always available. So I love to talk shop. I've had a couple just coaches from wherever these past couple months just say, hey, can we chat? And I got time. So why not?
No, absolutely. No, thanks for joining us. And I think you have a great story and great experiences that you can help have our listeners. I got a lot of great information that I'm taking notes on. And, you know, as a head strength coach, I think it's important to get everybody's experiences and, you know, help move our profession forward. So thanks for taking the time. And, you know, I'll be reaching out here soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
This episode is brought to you by Play. Play is a company that I've personally been working with from the start. Everyone at Play works to help strength coaches innovate and find solutions for our profession. From flooring, weight room equipment, outdoor spaces, and everything in between, Play will collaborate with you to find what you need. They work with everyone from professional teams to high schools, and they've always made me feel important and a part of the Play family. Refuse second best with Play. Find them at play.us and let them know Iron Game Chalk Talk 2.0 sent you. Thanks everyone for listening. Thank you to our great guests for taking the time to share their experiences. Thank you to Play and Team Builder for being great companies that help our profession. And most importantly, thank you, the listeners. Please find us on social media at Iron Game Chalk Talk 2.0. Find our show notes on wherever you listen to your podcast. Leave us a rating, comment, and subscribe. And don't forget to say hi. It's great to hear from coaches from around the country. Talk to you all next week on another episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk 2.0.